This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Progressive helps you compare direct auto rates from a variety of companies so you can find a great one, even if it's not with them. Quote today at progressive.com to find a rate that works with your budget. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, January 28th, 1850, Senator Henry Clay introduced a series of resolutions aimed at trying to build compromise in the Senate and avert a crisis between the North and South. Later that year, in 1850, in September, the series of bills would pass, and this would come to be known as the Compromise of 1850, one of those terms that maybe you remember from middle school and then don't really know what it was about, but very fascinating. We'll get into some of the specifics. The bills combined a number of different but very interconnected issues, namely territorial expansion and slavery. There was a fierce debate about how territories like Texas and Oregon and California would be brought into the Union, whether they would be admitted as slaves states or free states, what would happen to runaways from slavery. The Compromise of 1850 set some parameters on a number of those issues and maybe averted war for a decade or so. We will definitely discuss that and the legacy of all that. And with us, as always, is Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, how you doing?
So, Kelly, a couple episodes ago, you said something that you say you tell your students, which is that the Civil War was not inevitable. And this feels like a really good example of how to get back into that notion. So, you know, how does this fit into that story of the run-up to the Civil War and its inevitability or not inevitability?
Yeah. Well, there are a number of times, I think, where the country could have broken out into civil war. And this period of 1850 is another one of those periods where slave states and free states are constantly in contention over who's going to have political control, economic control. And so these compromises are developed in an attempt to keep war at bay, or at least to keep some of the violence at bay. And so this particular compromise does a lot. It has, you know, five different aspects to it. Should I go through each aspect of what the compromise
Lay it
does?
Out for us.
So, first, we should know that, you know, Henry Clay had wanted these all bills to come through separately, but they wanted to collapsing them all together into one big bill. But Texas surrenders its claims to present-day New Mexico and other states in return for the federal assumption of Texas as Texas's public debt. California gets admitted as a free state, which is a really big deal. Most important of the compromise is probably the Fugitive Slave Act, which basically says that slaves that ran away can now be recovered. And it doesn't matter if they ran away, you know, 5 days ago, 5 years ago. It doesn't matter if you were living longer in freedom than you were in slavery. You were subject to be vulnerable to be kidnapped and sent back to your master. And then the fourth part bans slave trading within the nation's capital, within Washington, D.C. I should say owning slaves is still legal within Washington, D.C. Lots of congressmen and senators brought their slaves with them when they went to serve, but being able to buy and sell and trade slaves is no longer legal. And then the fifth part is the new territories of Arizona and Utah and New Mexico, which will be open to slavery.
I mean, a huge part of this story, as Kelly is laying it out, is the intersection of slavery and expansion, as you were saying, Jody. I mean, the reason why all of this had to be adjudicated is because after the Mexican-American War, the United States had taken a significant chunk of land in the Mexican cession from Mexico, and all of that new land, they had to decide, where does slavery fit into all of this territory?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's I think from my naive sort of understanding of this, like, it's so fascinating that, like, that's what forces the question, right? It's not the moral implications of all of this, or, you know, it's like the North and the South felt like pretty settled on, and now all of a sudden there's this third thing that forces this question of what are we going to do, because we're starting from scratch a little bit with these territories. Kelly, how much of a controversy was it about what would happen to Texas, what would happen to California, and what's your sense of why it shook out the way it did?
Well, yeah, because whichever direction a state goes is going to determine who has the majority, who has the control in the political process in the Senate. And so that becomes a really big difference. So there was always sort of an even divide or split. And mm-hmm. so politicians are really working to make sure that they can maintain that even divide so that no amount of free states or slave states have a large amount of control over the political process. So that's really becomes a big deal. But the Fugitive Slave Law, I think, kind of makes a lot of this null and void because it really makes slavery national. There is no Mason-Dixon line per se. Now the only place that's safe for you as an enslaved person is Canada's border.
I think this is so important, especially to the question of whether or not the Civil War was inevitable and how much the compromise actually forestalls the Civil War. Because on the one hand, all of these compromises mean you're able to keep the balance in the Senate sort of on that knife's edge between slave states and free states. But in making slavery a national issue, in implicating all of the northern states, all of the free states in the process of keeping people enslaved, now you've pushed, I think, a lot of people in the North into a position where before maybe they had been uneasy with the compromise, maybe they had never really thought much about it, but now that they were directly implicated in keeping people enslaved, they were turning more anti-slavery.
So Kelly, at the time, did people understand that the Fugitive Slave Act was going to be the most consequential element here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was controversial the moment it was brought up again. And the thing about the Fugitive Slave Law is that it's actually an old law. It had been on the books for a very long time. George Washington had invoked it during the American Revolution when he was trying to get slaves who had ran away from his plantation. But this time, the law actually has teeth on it. So it means that if you are caught aiding and abetting a fugitive slave, you could be fined $1,000. You could be sent to prison for 6 months. If you're a U.S. Marshal and you're in the North, you can deputize anyone around you and they have to assist you. If they don't, they can also face harsh penalties. So white Northerners were pretty upset by this because they said it made them like, you know, de facto employees of the South. They didn't want to do slaveholders' biddings by helping to return their slaves. And it's really terrifying for free Black Americans because if they're caught or captured, they can't give testimony. They can't speak on their own behalf to say, no, I'm not who you think I am. So it becomes a really big deal.
And this is, of course, where we get the rise of the Underground Railroad. As you mentioned, Canada now becomes the one place where enslaved people can go and be guaranteed their freedom.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say the peak of the Underground Railroad is between 1850 and 1860, in which you have hundreds, thousands, really, of enslaved people and free people making the pilgrimage to Canada to get to a safe haven as they possibly can. But you also have Black communities that are fortifying themselves to protect themselves against slave catchers for those who decide to stay and make a good stand.
So let's take on this question of how much did this forestall war? I mean, Nikki, at the time, President Fillmore says that the Compromise of 1850 is a, quote, final settlement of sectional issues. Really? That's wishful thinking?
It is incredibly naive. I mean, this had been the poison pill of the United States from the moment of its founding. And to think that five laws passed through the Congress were going to suddenly settle this. It treats it as a legislative issue instead of a moral issue, instead of something so deeply rooted in and uncompromisable. At the end of the day, that was the issue with enslaving millions of people. It's not something that you really could compromise on long term. And so, yes, I mean, it buys the U.S. a few more years, maybe. But as soon as you get the Kansas-Nebraska Act and bring more territories in, it's all back on the table again. As long as the U.S. has territorial ambitions to spread itself across the continent, enslavement is going to be a problem that will pop up again and again and again in Congress.
That's a really good point. I mean, I think they just wound up kicking the bucket down the road a little more. But the Civil War, when it happens, there's no way to stop it.
Kelly, is 1850 when they imposed the gag rule in Congress? When does that happen?
Oh, I think that's earlier. I think it's 1830s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm going to say. Yeah, it's much earlier.
This is why
we
need a 19th centuryist.
Yeah, it's the 30s because they basically are saying to abolitionists, hey, you can't even speak about this in Congress.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Nicole Hemmer, thank you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter-Jackson, thanks to you.
Thank you.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. Our website is thisdaypod.com. You can find all of our shows there. You can find information about us, and you can find a way to get in touch with us. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Every day we are posting stuff about moments big and small at This Day Pod. Leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts if you feel so inclined. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.